Welcome to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, presented by League Apps. League Apps is the leading youth sports management platform, providing organizations with the technology and professional development they need to run, grow, and win. On a mission to bring the benefits of sport to kids everywhere, they go beyond technology to provide leaders with professional development and relationship building, and to work with sports-based organizations to address issues of accessibility and equality. To learn more, find them at leagueapps.com or as League Apps on all of the social networks. Now, here's the host of the show, longtime soccer broadcaster and voice of United Soccer Coaches, Dean Linke.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, as I am Dean Linke. This is the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. It is presented by League Apps, and our very special Thanksgiving edition of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast features two wonderful women. Up first, April Heinrichs, the fourth and final member that is headed into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame, will kick off the show. And then Danielle Slayton, who's done so much in the game, is now a co-founder of the new Bay Area NWSL soccer team. April Heinrichs, Danielle Slayton on this Thanksgiving edition of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, where we all have so much to be thankful for. With that, happy Thanksgiving once again, and we'll be back after this message from our presenting sponsor, League Apps.
We bet you didn't get into this business for the back office duties. That's why we created League Apps, the industry's leading youth sports management platform. So you can spend less time with busy work and more time doing what you love. League Apps provides organizations with the technology and professional development they need to run, grow, and win. Go to leagueapps.com to learn more. League Apps is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, presented by League Apps. Once again, here's the host of the show, Dean Linke.
Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. As you just heard, it's the Thanksgiving edition, and we are so pleased to be kicking off with the final member of the incoming class of the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame. I want to remind everybody that on October 26th, United Soccer Coaches announced the election of four incredible individuals as the newest members of its Hall of Fame. All four will be inducted as members of the class of 2024 during the 84th annual United Soccer Coaches Convention, January 10 through 14 in Anaheim, California. 3 weeks ago, Lincoln Phillips was on the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. 2 weeks ago, Dr. Joe Macnick was on the podcast. Last week, Jill Ellis was on the podcast. And for our special Thanksgiving edition, we have April Heinrichs. Those are the four members. Before we welcome in April, I want to tell you a little bit more about her, as if you don't know. But April Heinrichs had a brilliant playing career in college at the University of North Carolina, including two-time National Player of the Year, and then served as captain of the U.S. Women's National Team that captured the first ever FIFA Women's World Cup in 1991. She began her coaching career with stints at Princeton University, University of Maryland, and University of Virginia before joining the U.S. Women's National Team as an assistant coach in 1995. In 2000, she became the first female head coach of the U.S. Women's National Team. During her 5 years at the helm, April Heinrichs recorded an 87-17-20 record while leading the team to a silver medal at the 2000 Olympics, a third-place finish at the 2003 FIFA Women's World Cup, and an Olympic gold medal in 2004. Following her time as a head coach, April Heinrichs spent 4 years as sport performance director with the U.S. Olympic Committee before returning to U.S. soccer in 2011 as the technical director for the Women's Youth National Teams. In that position, she spent 8 years implementing a program where upon her retirement, U.S. soccer had a national team for every birth year from U14 through U20 and full-time head coach position for each team. In 1998, April Heinrichs was the first female player inducted into the National Soccer Hall of Fame. And on this Thanksgiving, I am thankful that my first ever camp, and I don't know if April knows this or not, as an intern with U.S. Soccer, was in Santa Barbara in 89 with Anson Dorrance. And I'm not going to lie, April, when I first walked in, it was you, Michelle Akers, and Karen Jennings-Gabera that caught my attention more than anybody. How hard you worked, the way all three of you finished, the way you worked together. That was the triple-edged sword days. And as a young man who was first introduced to soccer. You're my introduction, and I ran with that triple-edged sword, and you ran with it all the way to that World Cup title. So first of all, thanks for that, because it was a great memory for me, and quite frankly, I've not looked back, as soccer has changed my life and shaped my life, and you're a key part of that. So this Thanksgiving, I'm thankful for you, and I'm thankful that you're headed into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame, April. You've had a brilliant career. This Thanksgiving, how does it feel to know that you're going into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame?
You know, I think the older you get, the more you appreciate these types of milestones. And so to be amongst the others that are being inducted this year, my very good friend, Jill Ellis, Lincoln Phillips, and we met when I was a really young coach. I had to remind him that we met, but that's one of the other challenges when you get to our age, is we sometimes forget. And Dr. Joe Machnick and I have paralleled for many years and bumped into each other at many, many functions. So yeah, it's quite an honor. Took me by surprise because, you know, I do some work for the United Soccer Coaches Association now and then. And when Jeff called, I just thought we were chatting about a potential project. And then next thing you know, like three other people showed up on the screen. So it was quite nice. Another one of those times in your life where you get to reflect and you take a moment to really reflect. And I'm incredibly, like you, soccer is who I am, what I am, what I've done. It defined me. It's carried me and it's lifted me in moments where I always tell people that if I were going to write a book, it would be called Soccer Saved Me. So there's been moments where I've just thrown myself into soccer and then you just carry on. And next thing you know, you're loving everything. So I feel very blessed.
Yeah. Next thing you know, you're in multiple Hall of Fames. You know, it's kind of funny. We're going to get into your entire story, including the fact that you're from Littleton, Colorado. But when I interviewed Jill Ellis, I don't think she'd been to a convention ceremony before. I've been the co-host for 13 years, along with Dr. Ray Sieflik, who does such a great job. But yeah, Obviously at the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame, you do have somebody introduce the incoming person. And she reminded me that you did that for her. And she was like, you know, I'm kind of hoping April can do it for me. And I'm like, wait, first of all, Joe, we don't do that. We got enough people talking. And second of all, April's going into the Hall of Fame. She's got her own time to. So we had a laugh about that a little bit. And yeah, it's amazing how connected you two are.
Yeah, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of my long-term friendship, sisterhood with Jill Ellis. I mean, I remember the first time I ever met her. I remember very vividly coaching her at William & Mary. I remember working alongside her, some of our jokes. And, you know, in the absence of female role models out there, we partnered in such a way that we really challenged each other. You know, like surround yourself with somebody smarter than you. Check. Surround yourself with somebody that has a great sense of humor. Check. Surround yourself with somebody who's not afraid to chop you down in a minute if you get full of yourself. Check. So, you know, I think that we really have had a sisterhood, and that was an honor to introduce her at her U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. And yeah, to be brought in to the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame at the same time, it's like, yeah, a chapter. That's yeah. Nice.
Well, let's try to hit a lot of the chapters here. And we've done this before, but I want to go a little deeper all the time. And I'm even guilty of it. I'm talking about all these great modern day players that come from Colorado, but I always take the time, April, by the way, to still say, you know, the original Colorado is April Heinrichs. And I remember, I think I told you this before, I used to get mad at Kristen Hamilton because she's from Littleton and she didn't know who April Heinrichs was. And it made me so angry. But, you know, you think about now Sophia Smith and Lindsay Horan, and the Bodie sisters are from there. The Dyke sisters, Corey Dyke, who's at Penn State, Cameron, who played at Notre Dame. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. You started in Colorado. What is it? What's in the air in Colorado for women's soccer? Because it has gone way back and it continues to go, where some of the best players that this country has ever had has come out of the state of Colorado.
Yeah, well, we actually know. We know now. We did the research in 2011-12 that so this is all already 10 years old data, but we had the data that Colorado was one of the three most productive states in terms of the population of people, population of female players, and productivity in terms of making and being listed on a youth national team roster. Colorado was listed number two, only behind California. And so we know. And we know that, you know, it's the metropolitan area is quite big, but it allows for not 10 clubs. I'm sure there's 10 clubs in Colorado, but let's talk about, you know, high performance elite clubs. I think there's about three now in women's soccer. And so they're training best against best. They're playing best events, get best against best. And then they're traveling. We know that's part of soccer in America, and they're traveling and competing against best of best. And you have to, you also have to tip your hat to the coaches in those clubs as well. So it's good coaching. It's a good environment. It's a good local competitive environment, and weekly environment, but also they've done enough to now travel outside the region. As soon as you go west, north or south or east, from Colorado, you can get some great competition. So I'm proud of Colorado and my background. My childhood in Colorado is, I wouldn't change anything in my life, my era, my time, or my childhood in Colorado. And I'm proud of, I used to call myself secretly kind of a Colorado kid, you know, because I, in spirit, I still think of myself as a Colorado kid. And oh, by the way, Jalen Howell is a Colorado kid.
Yeah.
And Sophie Smith. And Lindsay Horan, who I coached and worked with all of those through the youth national team program. And yeah, the Colorado kids have that nice blend of a sporting culture, a grounded personality and a grounded upbringing. I guess I would have to say ambitious, because, you know, I know Sophie Smith has stated that she wants to be considered the best player in the world. So why not? Let's go for it. Now do the work for it, you know?
So do you remember the names? Maybe it was your parents. I don't know. But do you remember who one of the original people that got you thinking, man, I love this sport. I can do some great things in this sport when you were in Colorado. Do you remember who those people were, April?
Yeah, sports was different for me than kids today. I played every sport. You know, my father was the state champion in pole vaulting. I threw the javelin. I won a gold medal in the softball, the AAU softball Olympics. I ran track, all different distances, played soccer, structured soccer, basketball, and softball, fast speed softball. And I just went from playing every sport to narrowing it down by the time, like we had to in those days, you know. And basketball and soccer were my two best sports, the ones that grabbed my heart and also that I was good at. And nobody was recruiting me for soccer, but I had been recruited for basketball. So I went to Mesa College, which is now Mesa State. Might even have a different name now. I went there and played basketball for a year and was still hoping to be recruited to play college soccer, because I think soccer grabbed my heart in a more of a novelty way. That basketball, it's like, that's what a lot of people did, you know, not necessarily women, but there was a lot of basketball being played when I grew up. There wasn't as much soccer. So I was still very hopeful that somebody would accept me as a soccer player. I applied to a lot of universities, actually. I kind of wanted to go to the West Coast, UCLA. I wanted to play for John Wooden. at basketball, I want to play basketball for him. And then, you know, eventually somebody said, you know, you can't play for John Wooden, you're a woman. And I was like, what? Where's that written down?
That's awesome.
So I really wanted to go to the West Coast and UCLA. I had my eye on that, but they didn't even have women's soccer then. So I switched and went to the East Coast and played for Anson Torrance in soccer. Yeah. It's even better.
How did that all happen? How did Anson find you? How did you find him? How did that come together, April?
Yeah. And now that I'm telling that story, it's like, yes, you can talk about Anson Dorrance in the same breath as John Wooden. You can. You absolutely can. They're poetic. They're kind. They're visionary. How did it come about, Dean? So I played when I was a freshman playing basketball at Mesa State. I went back in the fall with my club team. I was still young enough to play for my under 19 club team. And we went to Rhode Island University, and played at a tournament in at Brown University. And it turned out I played against, my club team played against Marsha McDermott and her club team from Virginia. And I think on her club team was Marsha, Joe Bubas, and there was, I can't remember, there was a third player. I don't know who it was. Just those two, maybe, I'm thinking about. But that Virginia coach called Anson and said, "Hey, Anson, by the way, just saw a player playing against two of your recruits. You might want to check her out." Wow. And so Anson flew to Colorado, and it was winter. I was playing basketball in the winter. And he flew, and I met him in Denver, and he watched me play with my high school team indoor on a basketball court. I was already graduated playing with the high school team, and he recruited me from that.
Oh, what a great story. Yeah. And, you know, back then, you know, now we get in planes all the time and just hop and pop, you know, but, you know, I mean, back then, like, it's kind of a big deal, you know, on planes and flying around. Like, when you went to your family and said, "Hey, I'm going to go to Chapel Hill. I'm going to go to the University of North Carolina." What was the reaction there? I'm assuming they got behind you and made it happen.
Yeah. I mean, my parents were divorced by then, and finances were a huge problem. We were not a wealthy family. And so, I mean, I think my father said, "Well, we'll send her for a year." Cause I was one semester into my basketball career at Mesa State. Right. So it's like, yeah, we can do that. We'll send her there for a year. And Anson said, "Well, if you're an All-American, we'll give you a full scholarship. If or when you become an All-American," I don't think it was stated that way, but he somehow told my father that he would take me from a half scholarship to a full scholarship if I became an All-American. And I remember my father, because that's conversations back those days. Kids didn't have those conversations with the coaches, you know, but basically, when I became a third team All-American my first year at North Carolina, Anson wanted to keep me at the same level. My father said, "Nope, you're coming home." You know, we can't keep doing this. And Anson bumped it up to a full scholarship. So I stayed.
So, you know, one of the things about Anson, as you know, is about, you know, getting the maximum out of everything. And then also, you know, always about demolishing teams. And I always felt like you kind of had that mentality as a player too, like you were going to demolish whoever was in front of you, whether it was when you were playing for UNC Chapel Hill, or especially when you wore the red, white, and blue, you and Michelle and Karen, and then the players behind you, Foudy and Higgins and Ham and all these superstars, but especially you three up front, you were going to demolish and win big. Was that something you already had, or was that something that he helped nurture?
Yeah, I mean, I had that. When I was playing in the backyard, playing basketball with boys, we played baseball. We played tackle football in my backyard. It was a park, and we all met and we played all those sports. In addition to the structured sports I already mentioned, I always had the ruthless, brutal mentality towards winning. It was crush your opponent, and probably a little bit of stand over their dead body and celebrate a little bit of it. You know, like, there was no apology. No one ever taught me how to be apologetic when you beat somebody. You know what I mean? Like, that just wasn't in my childhood rearing book for my parents. So I think in the years past, which are many now with Anson and I, we've realized that we were a really good partnership. So he was still coaching the men when I arrived. He was learning. I think he's only 12 years older than I am. So, you know, when I was 20, he was 32. So that's pretty young to be coaching a head coach of women, right? So he was learning how to coach women. And I think my generation, myself, Marsha McDermott, even the women before us who were pretty tough. I mean, the women before us at North Carolina were tough as nails. I think he learned how to set standards and ask women to rise to them. And then he became demanding of those challenges. And then, you know, we partnered in a way that he realized with me, you can ask more, you can get women to be this brutally competitive people. And off the field, we can be relatively socially acceptable and still be kind teammates. I think he realized with me that I was part leader, but part leader, mostly leader by example, at, you know, as a young player at North Carolina, and that he could sort of feed me things and I would do it. You know, I was all in on Anse Durance from the entire time I played for him. So we became a good partnership. But then my expectations of my teammates were really high. And I've since learned probably I was hard on people. I've always known that I was hard on people because I'm hard on myself first. But as a player, I was very hard on people around me. And I think that Anson probably helped channel that properly. But it became not just socially acceptable to compete as standard. And the only line that you couldn't cross was, you know, violence or cheating. So otherwise, you know, it's okay. And that's what I think Anson learned through my generation of players, is that you have to give women permission to compete, show them when they're not, show them when they are. And when you give them that permission and they embrace it, women are just as competitive as men. I don't think there is a genetic difference between men and women in our competitiveness. It's a social upbringing that changes women, that gets women to focus more on being liked. So Anson and I were a really good partnership. I was his protege, so to speak, and he used me in a way to bring other people along. And I loved it, and he loved it, it seemed.
It's our Thanksgiving edition of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. Thankful to be with April Heinrichs. We're going to switch over to coaching after one more question. And I like that you said that, you know, you were hard on the, you know, the other players, because one thing that was fascinating is, as I mentioned, that triple-edged sword. You were up top with Michelle Akers and Karen Gabara. And, you know, I think Shannon Higgins is similar in that she doesn't get enough credit for being one of the all-time greatest players there are, April. I still find myself lecturing people, flat out telling them. I mean, I do think Michelle Akers is the greatest player that I've ever been around, but I have you right up there. You know what I mean? I have you right there with her as one of the greatest players. And I don't think enough people know or realize how good a player you were. I mean, when you hear me say that, does that matter to you at all? Because you were pretty darn good.
You know, one thing I didn't lack as a young player was confidence in myself and my ability to do things, right? I think compared to other women, I had confidence. And isn't that what coaching, and isn't that what we want? We want women that have confidence. You know, I think probably I was just a little ahead of my time. But I think about your comment with Michelle Akers and Karen Gabara. So I too think Michelle Akers was one of the greatest of all time. I put Carly Lloyd right up with Michelle, and Mia Hamm right up there as well. But then Karen Gabara was also the MVP of the World Cup in 91. So I've been humbled by those two. And watching today's players. So it's remarkable. It was a remarkable era. I wouldn't change anything. I love the fact that Michelle and myself and Karen get partnered that way. And, you know, Karen and I can tell stories about, you know, her entry into the national team and coming from the West Coast. It was a really different culture. And so you got to give credit with somebody with so much skill that she had, that she quickly adapted to a more durable player and a more competitive player, because she was skillful, unbelievably skillful. You know, Michelle was skillful in the air and with her feet and, you know, a dominant force and very technical player and could play many positions. Karen was incredibly skillful with her feet and her finishing. So they were different.
They're crazy things.
But I actually today, Dean, I look at what Carly Lloyd achieved, how technical she was, how tactical she was. She, like Michelle, played in the midfield and then played up top. And what she did at a much more competitive era, I think it's hard not to say that Carly might be the best. Carly and Michelle, you know, we always look fondly on our era. And so Michelle would get my vote, but think you could make a really strong argument for Carly as well, especially given, you know, the multiple World Cups and the influence and a hat trick in the World Cup finals.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting. I've been seeing more, like, I guess people from, you know, my era, your era, kind of saying that they'd love to see the 91 team play the 99 team, or the 91 team play the 15 or 19, you know what I mean? So they're talking more about how that would shape out, because they all were great. All right. So April, so here you are, you're being coached by Anson. And I love the fact that, you know, you played all those sports and were great at all of them, and including, you know, with all the boys and everything else. But when did the coaching bug hit, you know, while you were still a student, you know, because Anson's always been a big proponent of the association, maybe he tipped his hat to what was going on there. Like, when did the coaching bug hit for you?
Oh, gosh, I remember I was, you know, you're a senior and you start thinking about what you're going to do. And Anson was talking about the NSCAA and he was running courses. And he mentioned all the great names in the NSCAA world of coaching education. So I did my first coaching course with the NSCAA in 1987. So it was 1 year after I graduated from college. Was it 1 year? Would have been the semester after I graduated. So it would have been the January after I graduated. I graduated in December 86. So he hooked me into that. And of course, I loved that course, you know, the best coursework and testing and grades and field tests I could ever have in my world would be on the soccer field and the talking about soccer. So it was great. And I was still playing and trying to be a national team player. So I was a year and a half in Italy. I was coming back to work. Eventually I came back to work for, I think I was sitting in Anson's office and John Daly at William & Mary called and said, you know, do you know what April's doing with, is she interested in coaching? And Anson said, she's sitting right here. So I quickly drove up to William & Mary, did an interview, and John Daly hired me, and I was his assistant. I worked that year. The center forward was Jill Ellis. The center midfielder was Julie Shackford Cunningham. And Julie Cunningham Shackford. And then the center back or sweeper at the time was Megan McCarthy, you know. Wow. And Jill and Megan and I are closest of friends still. Jill must have said something to her father, and off I went working for John Ellis. And I'm working for John Ellis, literally driving in the van with him as he's driving all over Northern Virginia, running his 12 weeks of camp, running an indoor arena. And he's clearly mentoring me and taking me under his wings. And within 2 weeks of working with John Ellis, I said, I want to do this for the rest of my life. No, sorry. The order of that story is wrong. Working at William & Mary, within 2 weeks, I said to myself, I want to do this for the rest of my life. Yep. The next year I went to work for John Ellis and he was mentoring me, and you know, he poked me a little bit one time and said, you're rather monotone. And I'm like, monotone? What does that mean? I was like, man, he just shot me between the eyes. I have no personality is what he said, basically. So, you know, he's teaching me how to become a coach, and working with him, he's the first one that ever said to me in 1988, you're going to be the national team coach one day.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, that wasn't even on my radar. Even though I was playing on the team, I loved Anson. He was my coach. Clearly, I was channeling my best player and, you know, starting to become a coach. John Ellis is the one that planted the seed.
What's your greatest memory as head coach of the U.S. team?
Gosh, you know, I always get torn between those questions, but clearly I have these images. My greatest memories are the laughs. Mm. You know, Julie Foudy, Mia Hamm, Brandi Chastain, Christine Lilly, those guys are pretty darn hilarious and spontaneously hilarious. And they just make the journey so amazing, you know? So I think about the laughs. But of course, you know, winning, when you're the head coach and you finish, in my tenure, we finished first, second, and third. But it was third place at the home World Cup. That was painful. You know, it was second place in the Olympic gold medal that I genuinely feel we got, you know, a little bit robbed there. It was a golden goal and they don't even do that anymore. So we would have had a chance to come back. It was a handball, but all those things, right? But I remember being proud of the Olympic silver medal at the time because we outplayed Norway in every way possible. And we were really good in 2000. So, you know, the best moment is the winning, of course. You know, you're a coach, you sometimes it just really does boil down to winning the gold medal in Athens, Greece, where the Olympics started. And that was always my childhood dream with the javelin. Remember, I told you I threw the softball in the AAU Olympics. My grandfather wanted to buy me a javelin so I could throw in the Olympics. So my first sporting dream was to be an Olympic athlete. Never made it. Made it as a coach, but never made it as a player.
Really cool. Thanksgiving edition with April Heinrichs. She is one of four headed into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame. Lincoln Phillips, Dr. Joe Macnick, Jill Ellis, and April Heinrichs. April, get us caught up on what you're doing now. I know you live over in New Zealand right now and have ties to FIFA. Can you tell us what you're doing now?
Yeah, so last 4 years I've been working with FIFA as a high performance specialist. And we have endeavored during COVID, we did a global ecosystem analysis for boys and girls football, as they say in the FIFA world. FIFA hired a bunch of high performance specialists to travel. Initially, the idea was that we would travel and we would do this holistic analysis of the landscape of soccer and area in various countries. I had 14 countries that I did. Of course, with COVID, we ended up not doing it live. We ended up doing it online. And that evolved after we did the global report, the country reports and the global reports, that evolved into what I do now. And that is I support countries on a regular basis with their talent development. And the focus is not on governance or finance or any of those aspects of the game. It's narrowly focused into talent development. And we focus on the middle of the pathway. So not grassroots and not professional, so to say, but we take in the grassroots program, because if there isn't a grassroots program, then the feeder up system's not great. We have to understand the professional league in every country or the first division league in every country. But we're really focused on how do we give every talent a chance in each country. And then I work with those countries on an individual basis. And I'm part of an amazing team at FIFA where we gather and we're developing content for our countries. So content for us to offer countries, but also content for countries to take on. FIFA.com is led by Arsene Wenger's vision of FIFA creating the world's best online platform for all your content you could possibly need as a coach or a player. So it's only 2 years old. It's coming on board, talent development scheme. And it's really an amazing team of people to work with, because the other experts like myself, we have three women on the team. We have people from all over the world sitting in Africa and South America, and North America and Europe, of course, Europe and Asia. And you're just asking them conversations and you're facilitating conversations about how to improve football.
That's awesome. You're the perfect person for that. And because it's the Thanksgiving edition and you're going to be headed into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame, which means you'll have to, you know, book your travel plenty of time because it's a long trip back from New Zealand, as you know. I think you pick up hours coming back though, right? You lose them going there. And do I have that right? You lose.
Yeah.
Them. Yeah. All right.
I'm not able to go this year though.
Wait, you're not going to be there? Oh, so you're doing it. You're doing it virtually or? Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then I still think that this last question is important. It's Thanksgiving. You're headed in the Hall of Fame. What is April Heinrichs most thankful for?
Well, you've kind of led me right there. I'm most thankful for the game. Literally, soccer is my life. It has been since I can remember. I love the game. I love watching it. I love thinking about it. I love, there's just so many things that I never get tired of it. I never get tired of watching soccer. I never get tired of analyzing soccer or talking about it. You know, I'm tired of social media, you know, that gets under my skin a little bit. So I don't do too much of that. But otherwise, if there's a game on, I'm watching it, men or women. I'm still working in it. I'm thankful for the fact that I've had, I mean, think about it. I came through college. My first NSCA membership card was 1987 and course. So it shaped how I became and the framework, it became the framework for how I coached with Anson's sort of modeling. It pushed me right into a career. And since I've been an adult, I've known only soccer as my career. I mean, who would think that back in the 1980s? Who would think that a female could have her entire adult career be in soccer? And I remember specifically in 2004 or five when I left US soccer, after I became the national team coach and I was no longer the national team coach, I was like a crisis. What am I going to do? And that was 18 years ago. And I'm still in soccer. And I still have, you know, this time with FIFA. So I've had different chapters, different types of, you know, soccer brought me to the U.S. Olympic Committee for 5 years. And I worked with Paralympic sports and men's and women's team sports and some of the best athletes in the world. So I'm so thankful for soccer, to be honest. And the people that I've connected with, Tracy Bates Leon, we speak to each other multiple times in the week. Megan McCarthy and I speak to each other multiple times. Marsha McDermott, you know, those are the people that I'm constantly in contact with still. So all my closest friends are our soccer connections, and Anson and I are still in touch. And yeah, so I'm very thankful for the game.
Well, I know United Soccer Coaches is thankful for all you've done for the game. That's another reason why you're one of four outstanding human beings going into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame. And this Thanksgiving, I'm thankful to always be connected to you, April, as soccer has changed my life in so many ways. It's allowed me to do all I ever wanted to do. It introduced me to my wife of almost 30 years as well. And so many great people, just like you said. And I get to live in Chapel Hill where you started your career. So I'm pretty excited about that. But I'm most thankful for what you've done for the game. I'm proud of you on going into the Hall of Fame and really appreciate you being a part of our special Thanksgiving edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast. I send you my congratulations, heartfelt, and I want to wish you and your entire family a happy Thanksgiving, April.
It's a pleasure. Almost got choked up there talking about it. Your questions triggered me and pushed me back into the 1980s. It was an amazing era. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Amen. Full stop. And that's what we're thankful for, right?
Yeah, for sure. Dean, I am thankful for meeting you years ago. And you are a gentleman in the game.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're amazing.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Coming from you, that means even more.
Awesome.
Sincerely. All right, April, take care.
Take care. Thanks so much.
Thank you, April. A true treasure of the game and a well-deserved inductee into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame. We have one more guest on this special Thanksgiving edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast. It's Danielle Slayton, who's done a little bit of everything in the game and is now part of the Bay Area NWSL soccer team that's creating such a great buzz. Danielle Slayton, coming up next.
The home of all coaches is headed to Anaheim, California. Join us at the 2024 United Soccer Coaches Convention, held January 10th through the 14th. For our first time on the West Coast in over 5 years, we're pulling out all the stops with brand new special topics diplomas, world-class presenters like Randy Waldrum and Carla Thompson, one-of-a-kind pop-ups, 200-plus education sessions, and so much more. Register now by going to UnitedSoccerCoachesConvention.org. Register before December 14th to beat the price increase and join us in Anaheim. As a soccer coach, you're no stranger to developing your players. But how are you developing your own expertise? As a United Soccer Coaches member, you receive access to a range of resources, like our online learning platform, The Training Ground, to aid in the growth and enhancement of your coaching skills and career. From coaching education courses to lifestyle services, take advantage of new opportunities and member benefits with an annual United Soccer Coaches membership for just $125. Join the home of all coaches today at unitedsoccercoaches.org.
Welcome back to our very special Thanksgiving edition of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. Two special guests. We just heard from April Heinrichs, who's one of four headed into the United Soccer Coaches Hall of Fame. And now I'm pleased to be joined by one of my favorite people. I called a few games with her. I've watched her grow in so many ways. And now she's part of the Bay Area NWSL team, which is going to start here, I believe, this season. Right, Danielle? That's right. You're starting next season?
Yep, starting in March.
Okay, and you just heard the voice of Danielle Slayton, a true legend of the game, even though she's super young. But Danielle, thanks for being on this special Thanksgiving edition of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast.
Thanks, I'm happy to be here, and I'm thankful for you, Dean. How long have we known each other now? 25 years? Is that about well,
right? 19, or year 2000, when you came to the Courage, I think 2001, right? That's when we first met. So,
yeah.
So 23 years, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. This Danielle Slayton, I want to remind everybody, was a U.S. international. She won a national championship at Santa Clara. She was the defender of the year for the North Carolina Courage when they won the WUSA title. And I think she did it on one leg, actually. We'll get into that a little bit. But now you're getting ready as one of the key principals of the Bay Area team. So I want to start with that, Danielle. I mean, you guys are getting a ton of attention, which is awesome. I mean, it's a power-packed, star-studded ownership group and leadership group. Let's just talk about that. How excited are you about everything that's going on there?
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. I'm so grateful to be a part of it. I have two children of my own, but this is my third baby in terms of like bringing this thing out into the world. And we're running with our hair on fire. The reality of trying to stand up a company and a soccer team in less than a year is a wild idea, but we're going to do it. And the people that I get to work with every day on this are incredible. And the people and my former teammates who I got to start this with in Brandi Chastain, Allie Wagner, and Leslie Osborne. It's been a wild ride, but to do it with them is something I really cherished as well.
It helps to have your hair on fire with those four, right? The four of you, I mean, because you're all super strong women, right?
Yeah, I mean, I like to think so. And I think, you know, when we were actually at an event with some of our investors just last week, and I remember speaking with one of them, and we're kind of, you know, talking about the ups and downs, the highs and lows. And she said, look, like, Danielle, this is what you guys were born to do. This is what you were meant to do. You did it on the soccer field once, and now you're just doing it again in a different avenue. And so it was really helpful to hear, because I think, you know, amidst the chaos, sometimes you can get a little freaked out. But the reality is that we know how to deal with pressure. And that's what this is. And it's a privilege to have this pressure. And we're going to do it. We're going to kill it.
I also want to remind people that you were a coach as you spent time at Northwestern. In fact, now that I think about it, that was after your playing days, right? You got into coaching, and then I got to see you in Chicago quite a bit. This is the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. I already know you hired one of the all-time great coaches, let alone great people, in Albertine Montoya. But it's important to get it right as far as a coach, right?
100%. I mean, and it's 100% important to do things right from the jump. We're going to make mistakes. Certainly we're going to have, you know, times when we don't get it right, but absolutely getting a solid coach right from the first decision is massively important in setting the foundational pieces of the way we want to play and how we want to show up in the world.
Can you talk about, you know, I told you before we came on the air, I went to the Black Soccer Coaches Legends event, and in many ways I was uplifted to a point where I made sure that Black coaches and Black athletes and, I mean, just special people like you, Danielle, get a voice every single week. And I'm thinking about back in the day, you know, there weren't that many. And then I just watched the NWSL final, and, you know, Allie Krieger was great, but to me, the best players on the field were Midge Purse and Lynn Williams. And, you know, that's because of that, we need more representation at every level, right?
I think so. And I think you are, you know, you're seeing a shift on the men's side and the women's side, quite frankly. I mean, you look at the men's national team roster and there's a ton more Black players than, you know, when I was playing back in the day. So, I mean, I think the reality, you know, is representation matters, but also I think diversity matters, and it's how we're going to be a great soccer nation. And so we need that from a coaching perspective. We need it from a player's perspective. And we need it like from a ownership and leadership perspective, right? I feel like, I think in the wake of George Floyd, that's really where I started to realize personally that like my voice mattered and that I have a role to play in helping the next generation of players come up behind me. And so that's a little bit part of what continues to drive me in being part of this Bay FC franchise is realizing that I do have a voice at the table and I need to use it as much as I can and use my platform as much as I can so folks following in my footsteps can feel empowered to do the same.
And I feel like you also have a voice as a woman, extremely intelligent woman. And Danielle, you read the Yates report, you saw all of those struggles, and man, did the NWSL go to work? I mean, did everybody go to work? And I feel like we're past it. You know, maybe that's wishful thinking, but I feel like we've done enough where, I mean, the moon is out there for the NWSL and for women's soccer right now. What do you think?
I certainly think that the NWSL and US soccer took big, bold steps and they needed to be taken, right? Like the virus had to get out. And I feel like from a policy and organizational perspective, those bold steps were taken. I feel like also though, like, we can't get complacent because we know that this is an environment where sexual misconduct can happen. And so we have to stay on top of it. We have to stay diligent. And I also think the reality too is we know this isn't just an NWSL thing or a professional thing. We know that this started in the youth space. And so we still have a lot of work to do on that front. And so I think that, you know, the U.S. Soccer has set up a participant safety department, and they're doing a lot of work to not only focus on the professional level of game, but also on the youth level of the game, which is critically important.
We're here with Danielle Slayton, who is, what do I call you with the Bay Area? What's your title with Bay Area?
I am a co-founder, but then my operational kind of day-to-day role is Senior Vice President of Strategic Projects, and I'm working to head up the foundation. So I feel really, really lucky in that I'm in here on the day-to-day. I joke that my official duties are other duties as assigned because it's like whack-a-mole, you know, you're just trying to figure out what the problems are and you know, and solve them every day. But what I'm most grateful for is that I get to kind of have this longer term view of things. And so setting up our foundation, setting up our academy, working towards our long-term training facility, those bigger long-term strategic projects are part of what I'm trying to oversee.
Now I'm really going to challenge you. What are Brandy, Leslie, and Allie's title? What are their titles?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So Allie is the chair of our board. So she really sits at a league level and kind of sits on top of things and has helped guiding us from that organizational and league perspective. Brandy is really interested in figuring out how she can be a part on the player side and the coaching side. And so that's where we're going to hopefully work to slot her in. And then Leslie is most interested in really player care, player development, figuring out how we can help each individual player leverage their brand, leverage their resources, you know, and really kind of not only take the next steps within their playing days, but also looking ahead towards days when they will be transitioning out of the game. And I think that's really a huge piece of what we want to do, like this idea that we are a player-centric team. We were started by players and that the players will always be center and core to everything we do, whether it's from a soccer perspective, but also everything around them in the business, getting them connected to mentors and things like that. So Leslie is fantastic in that she is like knows everybody and she is a collector of people. And so I think she'll be really great in that role.
Well, you're great in everything you do. And I do, since we talked about it, you said, how long have we known each other? And I obviously met you when you came to the Courage, when the first year we were a disaster and then we get you and we win the WUSA title. Take me back to those days. What do you remember about coming to that team? You know, you'd won a national championship out in Santa Clara, and now you move all the way across the country to North Carolina. What do you remember about that experience, Danielle?
I mean, let's be clear. Like, I came to the courage, but we also had Birgit Prinz, who is like going to go down as like one of the legends in the game and the top goal scorer. So let's be clear about where a lot of that impact and goal scoring came from. But to me, I remember, you know, moving all the way across the country, being a little bit nervous, feeling like, especially, you know, there's such this history of UNC women's soccer. And I felt like, oh my goodness, I'm coming from Santa Clara. We just beat them in the national championship. And I'm like going into the lion's den of, you know, this North Carolina space. But honestly, the things that stick out to me are the people truly and my teammates. And I think of folks like Tiffany Roberts and Danielle Fotopoulos and Carla Overbeck and Hege Risa and Birgit Prinz, like, and Uni Len. I could go on and on about these women who obviously were wonderful teammates and great to play with, but really made an impact on the person I am today. And, you know, tremendously grateful for having these women in my life. I always say that I feel like the luckiest person in the life because I have gotten to play with and call the most badass women in the world my friends and teammates. And what they have given me is like tremendously helpful beyond my soccer days. And so that's what sticks out the most is the people for sure.
One of the things that I truly admire about you and will always admire about you is you weren't afraid to try different things and you were going to do it at your own pace. Even getting married, you were going to do it at your own pace. Having kids, you were going to do it at your own pace. And you and I talked about things like that along the way as we did a few games together, Danielle, and just talk about how you were wired that way, because I think we should all kind of live that way a little bit, not go so fast. I mean, you took your time. You got involved in things you cared about. And now here you are, I think, at a place where you're pretty happy.
I am happy. I am grateful. Like on Thanksgiving Day, like I just, you know, like it feels overwhelming to think about so many of the gifts that I have in my life. And yeah, I mean, I don't really know why, like I, you know, ran at the pace that I did. I feel like sometimes I go fast and sometimes I go slow. But I think more than anything, when I think about balance or when I think about life, you know, holistically, I just try to be fully present where I am. So this idea, when everyone talks about work-life balance, I don't know that I really get that concept. The idea of like trying to balance and hold all of these balls and juggle them in the air at the same time doesn't really resonate with me. What sticks with me and what I feel like I try to do is wherever I am, I try to be fully present there. So if I'm with my kids, like that's where we are. Phones are down. We're playing. We're in it. If I am at work, like I'm at work and I'm all in there. If I'm having a drink with my friends, like I'm all in and present there. So I feel like for me, balance is really jumping from one thing to the next and just being mindful and thoughtful. And then listening to myself and my body about, you know, am I anxious? Am I nervous? Like where are things that might get out of balance? It's really a signal in my body that I need to make sure that I slow down enough to pay attention to. And then I just try to make a move and adjust accordingly.
That works for me. And I'm glad that you mentioned Thanksgiving. This is the Thanksgiving edition. And so I want to ask you about the things you're most thankful for. And that probably means you need to say the names of your kids as well, Danielle, because, I'm so happy that you're a mom of two now. Are more coming, by the way? What do you think, Dan?
No hot takes, no breaking news here, that's for sure. But I have my husband, John, who is amazing. He's actually at home with the kids right now, getting them off to school. So thanks, babe. I appreciate that. But I have a little boy, Johnny, who's 3.5, and a 1-year-old, Marcus, who is 1. And they are the best thing that ever happened to me, the hardest thing that ever happened to me. But I just, I love that I get to be a mom. And I actually was talking with my oldest, Johnny, and I said, hey, bud, you know why I love you so much? Because you're the one who made me a mom. Before that, I wasn't a mom. I was a sister. I was a daughter. I was a friend. But just because of you, I get to be a mom. And so I don't know if it stuck with him. I don't know if he gets it, but it made me feel good. And it was a little bit of a moment that we had between the two of us just a couple of days ago.
Before we came on, I told you about the Black Soccer Coaches Legends event. I don't know if you've ever met her. I hope you heard of her. There's this woman named Nicole Hercules who has elevated the Black Soccer Coaches group. Have you heard of that name, Nicole Hercules? And what do you think of the job she's doing?
I have heard of Nicole. She and I haven't had the chance to really cross paths much, but just in general, I mean, when I think about the Black coaches and the work they're doing, the more that they continue to be continuing to get their voices out there, I feel like in a way that hasn't always happened. It has been fun to watch from afar. And I certainly hope that, especially as I get more involved and back in the game more deeply with BAFC, that I'll be able to connect with them and get to be a part more deeply as well.
All right, perfect. Well, and with this, I'm going to say happy Thanksgiving to Danielle Slayton, and I'm hoping you can say happy Thanksgiving to all of the United Soccer Coaches family. Is that okay?
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving to all the United Soccer Coaches. We love the work that you're doing out there. We're thankful for you, and thanks for listening.
All right, have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, Danielle.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Danielle, and thank you to each and every one of the United Soccer Coaches members and all of the great United Soccer Coaches staff. I want to especially thank Bailey Conklin. Bailey, I'm going to miss you so much. I wish you the best of luck in your new endeavor. I want to thank our producer, Colin Thrash. And again, I want to thank you, the great people of United Soccer Coaches. For all of you, I'm Dean Linke. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week for another edition of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast presented by League Apps.
Thanks for listening to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, presented by League Apps. League Apps is the leading youth sports management platform, providing organizations with the technology and professional development they need to run, grow, and win. To learn more about League Apps, find them at leagueapps.com or as League Apps on all of the social networks. And to learn more about United Soccer Coaches, visit us at unitedsoccercoaches.org.